Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 10th day of August, 2020. Another damn Monday that just keep rolling in. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. Thank you for downloading, subscribing, rating, and reviewing, and all those good things on all the platforms. All of them. Subscribe multiple times. What the hell do you have to lose? Oh, so much to get to. Such a stupid weekend. Such a crazy weekend. You can't just give us a break, can you, gods of politics? No, you can't, because that would be too nice. Anyway, we've got a lot of audio to get to. Democrats are beside themselves. Brian Stelter, the human potato, the weeble, the angry weeble that I have to assume is still a virgin and his kids were, like, hatched in some kind of experiment. He's got a weird view of what the media is like out there. It's kind of funny, but I feel like laughing at it is laughing at somebody disabled, because there's no way that he is not, there's not some, the hamster in his wheel is a couple of legs short of being able to run. We'll get to that. We'll get to the Democrats' reaction to the president's executive actions over the weekend. It has a familiar ring to it. If it does to you, we have the audio to explain why it has that familiar ring to it. I don't necessarily agree with the actions, but from a political strategic standpoint, it's pretty damn brilliant and kind of funny that the Democrats are left now with their balls in their hands, in their pockets, or wherever they're going to stick their balls. Nobody wants to think about that. So we will get to all of that and much more, of course. Thanks to everybody who listened to The Curse Show on patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. To those of you who have sent emails asking about some of the more creative swear words that you haven't heard before, I won't repeat them here. But if you really want to get new swear words into your vocabulary, the easiest way to do it is hang out with a Southerner. Now, if you're a Northerner, if you're a Southerner, then you probably should hang out with somebody from the North. But the different regions of the country have their own creative ways to come up with things. Let's just put it that way. Some very creative ways of putting up with things. And my friend Brian, who is from North Carolina, I know, like, too many Bryans. I have too many Bryans in my friend orbit. He was a fountain of creativity when it comes to the four-letter word variety. So I hat tip to Brian for that. And the creative one, I just have to sit back and think, what did Brian say? Or what would Brian say? And you pretty much can nail it. He's got an obscenity for everything. I don't know what it is about you Southerners. So I thought us Northerners could do it. But no, you Southerners, you do it in that accent, which makes it sound almost polite, like a compliment. Oh, I'm a knuckle fucker. That's pretty nice. Nope. No, it's not. And they also have weaponized bless your heart. So, you know, you got to give props to people where they deserve them. And the Southerners absolutely deserve the props when it comes to creative obscenities. Okay, before we get into the news of the day, let's talk about Life Change Tea, news about your life. You're dragging, you're sitting around going, why do I feel so tired and run down? Well, it's because your body isn't able to digest all the nutrition from the food that you eat. You may eat well, but probably you don't. You probably eat a bunch of processed stuff. So it makes it getting the nutrition out of that food more important than you can imagine. That's where Life Change Tea comes in. You go to getthetea.com, you order your Life Change Tea, you use as directed, you drink a cup a day, makes you regular, you go, it cleans you out as well. Think of it as a squeegee. And then you have a lot more square inches for your body to absorb the food, the nutrition in the food that you eat. And it's win. That translates to more energy, ladies and gentlemen. At checkout, enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K. Click apply, get free fast shipping. That's getthetea.com, promo code Derek. Click apply, free fast shipping. It's the tea that makes you go, and it's the tea that gives you more energy. Thanks to them, thanks to you, here we go. Let's talk about what the president did Saturday afternoon in New Jersey. Now, there aren't too many stories that start off and end well, that start off with, it was a Saturday afternoon in New Jersey that end well. You know, then they found the body. It's usually what, it was a Saturday afternoon in New Jersey, actually any day of the week in New Jersey, kind of can end up with a, and then they found the pile of bodies. Maybe I've just watched too many episodes of The Sopranos, but the president was up there at his resort, as the president wants to get out of town. I love how these media types start bitching. The president is in New Jersey at his golf club. Why is he up there? Well, he can't do much of anything. He's kind of stuck in the White House. He goes around the country when possible and gives speeches, tours plants, and things like that. But for the most part, he's stuck in the White House 7 days a week, so that he wants to go someplace else. Who gives a shit? I love the one that why isn't the president in Washington negotiating? Why is he up in New Jersey? Well, first of all, the president doesn't have time to sit down with Nancy Pelosi and listen to her bullshit and take her seriously. Nancy Pelosi's staff is dealing with the president's staff. They're dealing with the Treasury Secretary's staff. Very rarely does it rise to the level of the actual Secretary of the Treasury being involved in the meetings, and not until the end or there is something that needs that level of being addressed. Nancy Pelosi isn't sitting across from some junior staffer. It's staffers. Most of the stuff is handled over the phone, handled via email. They're not sitting there like it's the end of the movie Spies Like Us, where they're across a table. You know, if you've ever seen footage from the big summits of world leaders where they think Gorbachev and Reagan, how many times have you seen them shaking hands and signing the giant book-sized agreements? It's not like they just hammered that out over the course of a weekend. Ah, well, you know what? We got 3 days in Helsinki. Let's see if we can get anything done. And we'll just go absolutely crazy and go through with this. That's not how it works. There is negotiation after negotiation of people whose names you never heard of, who handle 99.9% of this stuff. The last 0.1% of it is essentially crossing T's and dotting I's when they bring in the big guns. They bring in the leaders. All right, we're going to need final sign-off on this. This is the deal. Is everything cool? And then they bring them out to do the ceremonial signing of it. It's not like Gorbachev and Reagan were on the phone every night. Saying, hey, Mikhail, so what do you think about this? Well, I don't know. What about this? That's not how it works. It's not how it ever works. It's smaller scale, but same concept when it comes with to negotiations with Congress. They're not, you think Nancy Pelosi sitting in a freaking room all day long with Kevin McCarthy and Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell and Steve Mnuchin? Do you really think that's what's going on? Hell, she's on MSNBC every 20 minutes. She's not in there negotiating anything. It's staff that handles it. So that the president went up to New Jersey because he's like, okay, the White House is lovely, but I'd like to have a little bit of a change of a scenery is not a big deal. Plus, you know, pick out a map. New Jersey ain't exactly the other side of the planet. If something absolutely does require the president's attention or involvement, he can get back to Washington, D.C. probably within an hour. You know, the shuttle from New York to D.C. that used to run, I don't know if it still does, was about an hour long. Just took you 4 hours because of security. But the idea that the president is out of the loop and out of the game is so stupid as to only be uttered by liberal journalists on Twitter, which is why it was uttered by liberal journalists on Twitter, because they're stupid. Well, they're not really stupid. They're hacky, but they don't realize that they're hacks. So that the president was up there and he took the opportunity to do some executive order signings shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. Presidents have routinely left the Washington, D.C. Hell, remember Barack Obama had the auto pen sign legislation on his behalf when he was out of town. That's how stupid it is to complain that Donald Trump is up in New Jersey for the weekend. Well, the president signed some executive orders that will possibly be declared unconstitutional because, well, various reasons. It has to do with spending. It has to do with revenue. Those things all generate from within the House of Representatives. But there's a possibility that they won't be because Congress has spent so much of the last 30 years at least ceding their power and authority to the executive branch in poorly written, poorly worded, poorly thought out legislation that it's the rule of unintended consequences, or maybe it's intended consequences, who the hell knows, but they have empowered the executive branch to do a lot. Now, whether or not you can cede power from the legislative branch to the executive branch, I suppose, is something that does need to be challenged constitutionally. The question really remains, do Democrats want to challenge it? They want to challenge it because it was all their leverage that the president stripped them of. What they don't want to be seen as is trying to do things that, or undo things that they say need to be done. It's kind of the brilliance of the strategy. The president suspended the payroll tax through the end of the year, retroactive to August 1st or maybe July 1st. It's unclear in my reading of it, of the stories about it so far. The payroll tax is about 12.5%. It's a good chunk of your income. You see that in your paycheck, you will notice a difference. That's a pretty big raise. Most raises are about 3% a year. They're really just cost of living adjustments. So that would be a big, big deal. Democrats don't like that. Democrats also don't like the fact the president extended the unemployment bonus. A lot of Republicans don't like these too, but these were the leverage pieces that Democrats were holding out there. The president extended the unemployment bonus indefinitely. Now it's $400 a week instead of $600 a week. And it's funny, I saw somebody, I can't remember who it was. It was somebody of no consequence. You know what? I know who it was. It was Arthel Neville on Fox News on Saturday, questioning Susan Ferriccio of the Washington Examiner. And Arthel Neville said that the Republicans were proposing a $200 bonus in their negotiations with Democrats for unemployment, and Democrats wanted to keep the $600 bonus. And Arthel Neville said that there are a lot of people who can't get by without that $600. And I remember thinking, that's $2,400 a month extra. You have to be, you know, you're collecting unemployment, so you presumably have a decent amount of money coming in. Is $2,400 a month, if you can't get by on unemployment for a couple of months and you're $2,400 a month short, you're living far too large for your income. Is that heartless of me to say? But I think it's realistic of me to say that if that kind of money, the regular unemployment, then you'd have been screwed, absolutely screwed, by just getting unemployment, because you wouldn't have gotten any of that $2,400 a month. Republicans were proposing $800 a month instead of $2,400, a significant drop, but still $800 more than $0, which under normal circumstances is what you would get. So then the president comes in with $400 a week, which translates to $1,600 a month. Are you still going to gripe and grouse that people can't get by? Then I suppose people need to take some initiative and take a look at where their money's going, because you're living well beyond your means. And maybe once we get out of this and get back to some semblance of normal, perhaps you should downsize your house, or you should buy a used car instead of a new car, and things like that. If you would have been screwed if you lost your job immediately, because that's what we're dealing with, because it just so happened, or just happened, that the $600 a week ended. So nobody's screwed yet. But the idea that liberals like Arthur L. Neville are trying to put forward, that, well, people just won't be able to survive without that extra $600 a week. There are a lot of people whose unemployment benefits were more than their job, than their wages, than their salary. So are you saying that if they go back to work, they're screwed, and that would then be a disincentive to work? If you think about it rationally and logically, nothing adds up, the left says. I want to point out what, I don't even know if this is the right, if the person's real name, but Eddie Zipperer on Twitter pointed this out about the Congress ceding the authority to the president to doing this. He had a very short thread on Congress bitching and moaning about, including Republicans, about the president taking this executive action. And again, it's something I've had a problem with Congress with for a very long time, is they write very vague laws that empower executive branches and empower the bureaucracy to figure out how to do things. And that it's all well and good when it's your own side, when it's your own team going, well, the sick, in a manner that shall be determined by the secretary, they'll make sure that X, Y, and Z happens. Well, that just means that you just want to pass a bill so you can pat yourself on the back and run on it, and you'll leave the dirty work of actually legislating to somebody else. It's the same thing here. He writes, when people say only Congress can appropriate money or only Congress can change taxes, they don't understand that Congress did do that years ago. They signed these decisions over to executive discretion. For example, President Trump can't unilaterally cancel people's payroll taxes for a few months unless Congress already passed a bill that allows it, which they did. 26 U.S. Code 7508A. That law says, in a disaster, the Treasury Secretary can determine tax liability of those affected by the disaster for up to 1 year, meaning you have discretion to change the tax code for up to 1 year in a disaster. I think by anybody's definition, the coronavirus pandemic would qualify as a disaster. 20 U.S. Code 1085 allows the secretary to define an economic hardship and offer a deferment of federal student loans for up to 3 years. Another thing, President Trump signed in executive actions, no more student loans, payments, or interest through the end of the year. I personally am taking advantage of that. So the question is not whether Congress passed laws. The question is whether the laws Congress already passed have been legally and properly invoked. The point is, the president is not legislating. He is invoking pre-existing legislation instead of relying on Congress to pass new legislation. This is an important difference. It's a huge difference. The president isn't usurping power. The rationale for his executive actions are already in place in law. That means that Congress did this a while ago. And again, it goes back to, it's all well and good if your party is in charge. It's your guy going to be making the decisions. And you just say, well, we'll let the secretary figure out how to do this. The Treasury Secretary can do that. The Education Secretary can do X, Y, and Z. And you don't think that maybe the other party is going to be in power at some point, and they might just see that as a giant loophole through which they can dive and take full advantage of it to implement what they want. This is both Republicans and Democrats. It allows Republicans and Democrats, or whichever one actually is passing the legislation at any given moment, to say, look at what we've done. It is wonderful. It is. Let's just, for a quick example, let's use the Endangered Species Act, right? Nobody wants to see the dodo go the way of the dodo. They don't want to see animals or species become extinct. But in an attempt to protect species, a generally laudable goal, they have empowered the federal bureaucracy to essentially seize property from just about anybody. If the government really wants to mess with you, I guarantee whatever plot of land you own, on it is some kind of insect that you've never heard of and probably never saw in your life, or it is very close, it resembles their habitat, or some migrating bird's habitat, and they say, especially if you have proper, substantial property. So the government can come in and say, you can't do this. You can't build on this. You can't dam this tiny little creek. You can't build a house on this thing because there's a grub worm down there. And that grub worm is a threatened species. Now, it was never intended for that. It was never intended to usurp all private property rights of people. But there are literal horror stories of the government doing just that because some bureaucrat got a bug up their butt or somebody who doesn't like you decided to call the EPA and say, hey, there's a bug out there that is endangered and therefore you should make sure they can't use their property, can't do anything with their property except maybe mow the lawn. It's that kind of unintended consequence. In a rational world, you would have to, for each species being put on the endangered species list, Congress would have to act. Congress would have to look at the consequences of each one and say, is there something else we could do? Do we really need to save this? Is it worth doing this, that, or the other thing? But instead, they empowered the bureaucracy to decide what goes on the list, what comes off the list, and what being on the list means. And if you fall on the wrong side of a bureaucrat on this one, you're screwed. And your private property rights are gone. But moreover, the Democrats and some Republicans are arguing that the president overstepped his power. Again, they're the ones who passed the law. There has been no law proposed to rid the United States Code, which is mammoth, of all of this crap. These are loopholes that President Trump is driving through, and if you really want to stop him, close the loopholes. Pretty simple. But let's get in the Wayback Machine, shall we? And we'll talk about, we'll listen to a guy who knows a thing or two about taking a political advantage of a situation to impose his will on the country. His name was Barack Obama. Now, Democrats have been refusing to negotiate in good faith with Republicans. They want payoffs for their buddies. They wanted a $3.5 trillion bill. They wanted everything you could. They wanted bailouts for Democrat cities and states who had been spending like drunken sailors. And now with the downturn in tax revenue, they don't want to have to take a serious look at their expenditures and say, maybe we should cut this thing or scale back this program or whatever. They don't want to do that. They want Uncle Sam, us, actually our great-grandkids, because our money's gone, our kids' money is gone, and the great-grandkids' money's almost gone, too. But they want them to foot the bill so they don't have to make tough decisions. It's so pathetic what passes for leadership these days. Well, they can't really bitch too much about President Trump doing this because they cheered Barack Obama doing this, these Democrats did. Let's listen to Barack Obama talk about immigration one of the many times he used this phrase while he was president and imposed his will via executive order. And tell me if there's any difference between the wording and the rationale behind what Barack Obama did in, say, creating the DACA program and what Donald Trump did in suspending the payroll tax, in extending unemployment benefits, and everything that he did over the weekend. See if you can spot the difference.
Middle-class families can't wait for Republicans in Congress to do stuff. So sue me. As long as they're doing nothing, I'm not going to apologize for trying to do something.
As long as they're doing nothing, I'm not going to apologize for trying to do something. And, you know, the liberal media cheered that. My goodness. He's such a wonderful saint, that Barack Obama. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Can I polish your halo, Mr. President? Well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. The rationale was, if Congress won't do something, then I will. Now, I am firmly of the belief that Congress doing nothing is Congress choosing to do something. Meaning, Congress either passes legislation or they don't. If they don't, that's their choice. They can bring a bill up to a vote, and if the vote is no, then there you go. Now, they don't bring bills up to votes that are going to get a no, unless it's for show. But realistically, Congress not doing something is Congress making a choice. If your choice is yes or no, and you choose no, that's you exercising a choice. But to Democrats under Barack Obama, it was the choice is yes or no. But if you don't give me a yes, I'm going to give myself a yes. That is usurping Congress. But Democrats cheered that. So why is it any different if Donald Trump does it? Well, it's different in this sense, because Democrats were holding all of this stuff hostage. Democrats desperately wanted to use this leverage. Republicans don't care about the middle class. Republicans don't care about working Americans. Republicans this, Republicans that. Well, there you go. The president just extended unemployment bonuses. The president suspended evictions. Again, another Democrat. People are being evicted. Donald Trump doesn't care. Now, they can't make that argument. Donald Trump is, people are not able to pay their student loans. Lives are being ruined. Credit is being destroyed. Oh, wait, no, he took care of that one, too. It's amazing how we need a stimulus to put more money in people's. Oh, wait, he took care of that one, too. Now, what do the Democrats have left for leverage? They don't really have much left for leverage. What they have left is demands. They demand money for teachers' unions. They demand money for bailouts of cities and states that have horribly mismanaged their budgets and don't want to face that reckoning. They have all their leverage swept out from under them like it's freaking Johnny sweeping Ralph Macchio's leg in Karate Kid. They just, boom, swept that sucker right out from under them. Now all they've got left is a bunch of fever dream, liberal fever dream wish list stuff. Please give us $1 trillion so that we don't have to look at our state budgets. Please? Well, there's not a lot of leverage in that, not a lot of incentive for Republicans to go, okay, here's $1 trillion. Not going to happen. It's really screwed them up. But it screwed them into a corner in a politically brilliant way, whatever you think of the constitutionality of it. Because the only way for Democrats to undo this, to get that leverage back, is to sue. You heard President Obama there saying, sue me. Sue President Trump. Now, how is that going to work logistically and politically if Democrats, which Nancy Pelosi, by the way, has not said, she's skillfully avoided the question as to whether or not she wants to sue the Trump administration to block these measures. But how is that going to look politically? How would they defend this if Democrats go to court to try to stop things they said they were desperate to get in these negotiations? Because the closest thing I can come up with for an argument for Democrats to make is that they did this, that the president did this in an unconstitutional manner. It'd still be seen by the public as trying to take away things that they've sworn up and down the public desperately needs and are important and they aren't getting through negotiations. But it would also retroactively kneecap President Obama's actions on the DACA program and all the other executive actions that Barack Obama took. If Barack Obama can usurp the power of Congress, bypass Congress, and use his magic pen and phone to implement things, then why can't President Trump? And if President Trump can't, then Barack Obama can't. And that would make for some interesting filings in future lawsuits and trying to overturn the Obama administration's executive actions. They're screwed into a corner because these are things that Democrats have sworn they want, that the American people, in fact, need. So how do you sue to stop them on the grounds that they were done in an unconstitutional way when your party, A, isn't particularly known for its fondness of the Constitution and the restrictions the Constitution puts on government. B, as I laid out earlier, federal laws passed by that very same Congress have empowered, quite likely, or at least given cover to these executive actions. And see, the election is just around the corner. Do you want to be the party that's trying to take away $400 a week from the unemployed? Are you going to try to be the party that is trying to force people to pay their student loans and interest on their student loans through the end of the year when your candidates, your field of 800 candidates, were all running on forgiving all student loan debt? You begin to see the box the Democrats are in. They literally have nothing or next to nothing left to negotiate for when it comes to their other things on their wish list. All the Democrats had to do was be kind of reasonable and rational. They could have easily come up with a compromise on these big things. On the so-called important things that everybody agreed on, they could have, and the White House offered and Republicans offered, all right, let's pass the things we agree on and keep negotiating on the other stuff. And Democrats said no. The White House, on several occasions leading up to the end of the $600 unemployment benefit, said, let's just pass an extension of that so people are not hurt. Democrats, knowing full well that that was their leverage, that they could run around the country saying the president is hurting people, he's actually hurting people, that they were not about to give that up. They did not want to let that go. Well, President Trump just took it from them. You can think what you want of the constitutionality of it. That's a theoretical argument that could, if somebody sues, be settled in court eventually over time. But strategically and politically, it was a brilliant move by the president to sign these. Because Democrats can't grouse about the results of what he did. All they can do is bitch about how he did it, which then makes them look like high-grade hypocrites retroactively in terms of President Obama. Again, it's an absolute mess, but it's a mess that they made. And now the pig can whine about how messy their trough is, but the pig's the one taking a dump in it, right? That's the Democrats. So, strategically, pretty damn good. Speaking of pretty damn good, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure the lucky winner is one of his top supporters, so be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. The offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you are one of them. All you have to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Not going to lie, I entered. Again, that's Derek, D-E-R-E-K, to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. By the way, all the whining from Democrats about Donald Trump is defunding Social Security because he's talking about possibly suspending, if he's reelected, suspending the payroll tax permanently for people making under $100,000. And well, that's where Social Security and Medicare get their money from. That'll be defunding. It's funny in many levels because Democrats whine constantly about how they're going to pay for their programs, the trillions and trillions of dollars of spending. And what is their answer always? Well, just a small tax on Wall Street speculators, Bernie Sanders, or a small tax on millionaires and billionaires, a small tax on the wealthy. And they think that they can just go, it's like they found the best fishing pond in the whole world. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to drain it and get all the fish. And then we'll fill it up with water again. And then we'll drain it again and we'll get more fish. And you're like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. If you take all the fish out of it and you fill it back up again, there's not going to be any fish in there to get. No. Just trust me. Don't think too hard about it. That's what we're going to do. That's been the Democrats' argument to pay for everything under the sun for decades. We just tax the rich a little bit and then we'll do that. And you sit there and you think there aren't enough rich. There aren't enough rich. You're going to take all their money. You take all Jeff Bezos' money and you got all Jeff. Great. You got $150 billion. Next year, Jeff Bezos has nothing and you can't get anything from Jeff Bezos, let alone $150 billion. So you've just screwed it over. But they've been arguing that we're just a small tax on the wealthy and we can pay for Medicare for all. We can pay for all of college. We can pay for everything. And so this logic has been turned on their head. Now they're going to say that exempting people from the payroll tax if they earn less than $100,000 a year is suddenly going to break Medicare and Medicaid. Well, you were going to save Medicare and Medicaid by taxing the wealthy. Why not just tax the wealthy a little bit more and then problem solved? Well, forget the fact that they've already promised to tax the wealthy for any number of 50 programs that they're pushing forward. But they have to then face the reality that their math doesn't add up. There aren't enough rich. There are a lot of middle class people, and anything you're going to pay for is going to have to soak the middle class. Well, aside from that, and their claims that Donald Trump is going to ruin Social Security, somebody went back in the archives and found some interesting footage of Joseph Robinette Biden back in the early 90s, I believe it was. He's been in the Senate so damn long. C-SPAN existed, so it couldn't be all that old, couldn't be back to his early days. But he's speaking on the floor of the Senate, and he's talking about freezing Social Security, freezing Medicare spending, freezing government spending total. And he worked desperately with Chuck Grassley, Republican senator from Iowa, on it. And he desperately wanted it. And then at the end of this, after you hear Joe Biden say he wants to freeze Social Security, just to put a fine point on it, somebody edited together that clip with Joe Biden from earlier this year insisting that he'd never said what you're about to hear him say. Here's Joe Biden.
I tried with Senator Grassley back in the 80s to freeze all government spending, including Social Security.
Do you think, though, that it's fair for voters to question your commitment to Social Security when in the past you proposed a freeze to it?
No, I didn't propose a freeze.
No, I didn't propose a freeze. I never proposed a freeze. Oh, really? Then why were you screaming on the floor of the Senate that you worked tirelessly to get a freeze in Social Security spending, Joe? Why would you do that? Were you just joking? Were you going to Lucy, then Charlie Brown the football with that? Like, just kidding. You guys took me seriously. Just kidding. No, Joe, you did, in fact, propose a freeze. You did that. Nobody else did. He doesn't know. He doesn't remember. When you work in politics as long as Joe Biden has, one bullshit speech bleeds into another. You don't very often mean what you say ever, so it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. Just like Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi whining this weekend about, and for a very long time, ever since President Trump proposed a payroll tax holiday, and with all the other Democrats saying, there's no No benefit. There's no stimulus. There's nothing. I don't understand what the deal is. Why would you even propose cutting or suspending the payroll tax? It won't help anybody. See, Democrats believe that the only way, the only entity that is possible helping, in quotes, anybody is government. The private sector can't do anything, and Lord knows people can't help themselves. They're stupid. I mean, they have a good point there because a lot of people do vote for Democrats. But still, so let's get in the Wayback Machine as you gear up for listening to Democrats whine about how the payroll tax isn't going to be a big deal. It's not going to help anything. It's not going to stimulate anything. And Nancy Pelosi will parrot this along with everybody at CNN and MSNBC. So let's go back to 2012. Nancy Pelosi talking about a temporary cut in the payroll tax. And what did Nancy Pelosi think of that idea back then when there was a Democrat in the White House?
This coming, evidently, agreement on the payroll tax cut for individual families, 160 million American families, this will be a boost. From a macroeconomic standpoint, the demand that is injected into the economy when people spend this money will be a job creator.
Well, quite a difference the letter after somebody's name in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue makes, doesn't it? So just keep that in mind. The grousing has already started about how a payroll tax holiday doesn't help anybody. It's garbage. It's blah, 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 blah. And remember what Nancy Pelosi said back in 2020. There's an old joke going around Twitter that for President Trump, there's an old Trump tweet for everything. And it's largely true. President Trump was a prolific tweeter long before he entered the political fray. But for someone like Nancy Pelosi and really most Democrats, there is an actual video of them saying things that contradicts everything they say now. Speaking of things that they say now, this week Joe Biden is, since next week starts the Democratic convention, this week Joe Biden is expected to name his running mate. Ooh, everybody's waiting with bated breath, mostly because they've all bet on it. You know, that's one of the ways to pass time in Washington, D.C., is to bet on all this crap that normal people who don't live inside the Beltway look at and go, you need a freaking hobby. The favorite is Kamala Harris in the betting markets. So we'll see what comes out with that. But I just, let me see, I'll pull this up because I think it's actually a decent indicator, and it's mostly based on people's thoughts and feelings of what they're seeing specifically in the news coverage of it. My betting site of choice, because I'm one of these idiots that I'm mocking, is predictit.org. And predictit.org has their own VP betting rates. Kamala Harris is still by and large the big get, or most of the money is behind her. But there are other people coming on strong. Kamala Harris is at 40. Now, you think of this as a stock that you buy, right? And it has a maximum value of a dollar. And you can buy it for as low as a penny if you can find somebody to sell it to you. Kamala Harris is now selling at 44 cents. Susan Rice is at 33 cents. Gretchen Whitmer at 10 cents. Tammy Duckworth at 8 cents. Elizabeth Warren, 6. Same with Val Demings. And then Karen Bass at 4 cents with Michelle Obama is never going to be an issue. We should find out this week. I'd predict relatively early in this week who the VP choice is going to be. But Joe Biden has already committed to not finding the best person for the job, finding the best woman for the job, which for my money, if you're really into women's rights and the feminist movement, having a set aside for a woman just seems, I don't know, condescending, right? Doesn't it seem like a pat on the head, like, you're a good girl? Who's a good girl? You're a good girl. Well, they haven't gone so far as to say it will be a woman of color. The media and the extreme left are, and you know, frankly, given Joe Biden's racism lately, it probably should be a black woman. You know, you can't just say that they're all monoliths. There's a great joke going around on Twitter about Joe, or the Babylon Bee said that Joe Biden said it doesn't matter which black woman he chooses as his running mate. They all think alike anyway. It's funny because it's based off of what Joe Biden actually literally said last week. Well, the Veep stakes will come to an end. Somebody will win a bunch of money and we'll know who Joe Biden's, it's not going to be Joe Biden's puppet master. The vice president can't be a puppet master. It'll be the people, the advisors around Joe Biden who are the puppet masters still. But I want you to listen to Nancy Pelosi asked about this and see if you can make any sense out of what she says. Now, Joe Biden, rightly so, and it was the focus of my column yesterday at Town Hall, Joe Biden rightly gets criticized for not being all there, for not being able to string together a coherent sentence. And you can go back and find, and I played you a clip of Joe Biden from like 25 years ago, where he was able to, without a teleprompter or notes, string together a coherent sentence. He can't do that today. Well, lost in the embarrassment of Joe Biden trying to string together a coherent sentence rather unsuccessfully is Nancy Pelosi trying to string together a coherent sentence unsuccessfully. She is almost as bad as he is. You don't get the sense she doesn't stop halfway through and change tactics or sort of admit that she doesn't know what the hell she's talking about. But she still does lose track of what the hell she's saying. She's just better at covering for it. Now, Nancy Pelosi, I believe she's 80. She's up there. So it's the mental acuity questions about Joe Biden should also be asked about Nancy Pelosi. Listen to this exchange, and I'll interject throughout it, and see if you can figure out what in the hell she's talking about.
Yesterday, he made some comments. He wound up walking them back a bit. He was talking about the diversity in the Latino community as compared to the African-American community. He said, look, he didn't mean to suggest that African-Americans, of course, are a monolith. He came out very forcefully to say that.
I just want to interject right there. I don't know the name of this MSNBC anchorette, teleprompter reader personality, but Joe Biden didn't come out forcefully and say shit. He sent out three tweets. To clarify, his staff wasn't dumb enough to put him in front of a camera again to try and get him to verbally explain what he was doing. He tweeted it, or the staff tweeted it, forcefully, my ass. But when you're a Democrat, you can expect this kind of cover for your screw-ups and your racism.
Yeah. My question for you, big picture, though, Madam Speaker, against the backdrop of the conversation that we're having nationally about race right now, do you think that it would be a strong move for Vice President Biden to pick a running mate of color?
Well, I think that the vice president, that is his discretion. He has to pick someone that is right. I don't think, let me just back up on it. I don't think it matters who the vice presidential candidate is historically. It has never mattered. Lyndon Johnson, Sarah for victory, Taylor Parent for defeat. But by and large, it's really all about the two candidates for president.
Couple things. Nancy Pelosi saying it doesn't matter who the vice presidential pick is largely true. Secondly, what the hell was she saying about Lyndon Johnson? Lyndon Johnson for the anybody know? If you can figure it out, you can email me because I've listened to it several times and I still have no idea what she was trying to say. She wasn't done talking, not by a long shot.
And I'm so proud of Joe Biden. He's going to make a great president. I always defer to the judgment of the candidate in selecting the vice president in terms of who he has confidence in, that he can work with, who could serve in case of emergency, and also that would do no harm. In the presidential, but it's not, I think, making a difference. I'm very proud, though, that so many women of color are among those being Well, he has a vast array of talented people to choose from. I'm so happy that some House members are being considered and former House members. So we'll see what he does.
Why does she speak like somebody's just off camera telling her to wrap it up? Every sentence out of her mouth, it's like there's somebody just winding their hand, like, come on, tapping at their watch, going, let's go. Come on, speed this up. Because her speaking quickly is not a good thing for her. She can barely string together a coherent sentence under normal circumstances. Speaking quickly means that's a tougher thing to accomplish, while also apparently dealing with loose-fitting dentures or whatever the hell is going on inside her mouth. It's an absolute, total, and complete mess. But it's Nancy Pelosi. What are you going to do? She's hailed as a genius and a master negotiator who just had her ass handed to her by the president of the United States in his executive actions. Anyway, like I say before, she wasn't done. She's getting there, though.
But it's his decision. This is the most derivative thing. It isn't about lobbying for it because other people want you. It's about who the president chooses, president-elect to be soon. 88 days? 88 days and about 12 hours. I can't wait. But whoever he has, any one of them would be just great. And wow. I'm so glad that so many women of color are in the running as we get down to the end.
I'm so proud that so many women of color are in there. Yeah, they're in there. Many of them are going to then face whoever, if one of them gets picked, is going to face the were they picked simply because they're a woman of color. But don't worry, an old white lady, an old really rich white lady, is going to be right there to give him a lollipop and pat him on the head and say, good job, you totally deserve this. It's ultimate in condescension. Whatever happened to picking the best person? Or at least somebody who helps you out politically and not making, you know, Joe Biden could have picked whoever he ends up picking without saying, I promise you it'll be a woman. And without having made so many racist flubs to the point that it pretty much has to be a black woman at this point. If he'd have done that, he'd have been in much, much better shape. But then to do that, he'd have to be in much, much better mental shape. And that, ladies and gentlemen, just ain't Joe Biden. It just ain't Joe Biden. It ain't who he is. So, well, if I'm betting, and I'm thinking about betting, and I'm trying to calculate the odds in my head, there are reports that Joe Biden met with Gretchen Whitmer last weekend, who secretly met with Gretchen Whitmer. Not really sure who leaked that and what good that would do. I don't think it's going to be Karen Bass. She's got too much baggage. I don't think it's going to be Val Demings, because I don't think anybody knows who she is, and she's a former cop, so that wouldn't work. I don't think it's going to be Elizabeth Warren, because she faked being a Native American for a good chunk of her life. Tammy Duckworth, there are few human beings who deliver a speech in a more boring, unconvincing way than Tammy Duckworth. Gretchen Whitmer, you know, Joe Biden wants Michigan, needs Michigan. I'm not sure if Michigan is for Gretchen or not. I hope not, because she's so awful, but nothing would surprise me. But again, she's got a strike against her that she's a white lady. Susan Rice is second on the betting list. Susan Rice has never run for anything. She has her own bad baggage, kind of a pathetic figure, if you ask me. She's the designated liar on Benghazi, and she was willing to do it, which is frightening about her character. And then there's Kamala Harris, who beat the crap out of Joe Biden as being a racist during the primary. It's going to be interesting to see if they can bridge that divide, if she in fact gets picked. But she doesn't bring a whole lot to the table, to be honest with you. Every time I've mentioned Kamala Harris, either on this show or on the radio, and played clips of her saying, I'm the first African-American to do this, that, or the other thing, or African-American woman, the emails come flooding in. Maybe they're bots. I don't know. Maybe they're probably not Democratic voters. But it's a bunch of people saying, and black women, too, say, she isn't a black woman. She's Caribbean. It's different. She's not an African-American. She's a Caribbean-American. I don't know that there's a difference. But apparently to some people, they're bothered by this difference. And so I'm not really sure if that helps him. Plus, she's got a law enforcement background that she'd have to denounce. She tried to unsuccessfully in the primary and did so poorly she didn't even make it to Iowa. So I'm not sure she's the one. Plus, what, you think, well, you want to bring somebody with you who can help you or at least possibly help you win a state. If Joe Biden isn't going to win California, Joe Biden should concede right now. So it's amazing to me when you really look at the candidates and you look at the bench and you do so honestly, how weak it is. Then you go back to how destructive the Obama years were to the Democratic Party. 1,000 seats, 1,000 elected offices across the country switched parties from Democrat to Republican. Now, it's an ebb and a flow, and it's ebbing back in that direction. But still, you have years of not having people being groomed, people learning how to campaign, how to be effective campaigners. That time was lost, and that time ain't coming back. So going forward, Democrats are going to really have a tough time if this is the best of their bench. Of course, this is only the best of their bench when you really, really seriously limit your options by saying, I'll only choose a woman. And then pretty much everybody looking at it and going, he's such a racist, he's got to pick a woman of color. So that's what you get when you go with Joe Biden. Who will it be? I don't know. I think that the Democrats think that Kamala Harris is a wonderful campaigner, even though I don't know how you can think, well, she's a wonderful campaigner who didn't even make it long enough. She didn't even make it to December. She dropped out in November. I'm not sure how a wonderful campaigner can't make it to Iowa. Hell, Joe Biden made it to Iowa once. So we shall see. I want to play you this clip from the human potato, Brian Stelter. It's short and hilarious. It shows you just how far up his own ass one man who probably can't bend over to tie his shoes can get in a figurative sense in talking about how Fox News exists to destroy Joe Biden, but there is no correlating left-wing media outlet in the world that does the same to try to destroy Donald Trump. It's just proof yet again that even the people who are paid by CNN don't watch CNN.
Sort of sharpened their teeth on Bill Clinton. This has been the way they've built audiences for 3 decades now.
Yeah, I don't want to claim it's new. I just am arguing that it's getting worse. It's getting more severe. Aaron, your view of this, you know, when you see entire media companies essentially exist to tear down Joe Biden, is there an equivalent to that on the left tearing down Trump?
There really isn't.
Is there an equivalent? There's no equivalent at all whatsoever. Now we go to a special about how Russia is controlling Donald Trump. Here we go. It is another special revisiting impeachment about why Donald Trump should be summarily beaten to a bloody pulp in the town square. He doesn't watch CNN. I can't blame him that he doesn't watch CNN. But to say something like that when your job is to be the media reporter for CNN is, I don't know. I don't know what they're paying him. And I realize that he's otherwise unemployable. He's as smart as he is handsome. I realize that he's otherwise unemployable, so he has to be careful because he doesn't want to lose his job. They'd be hard-pressed to find some. Maybe Oliver Darcy would come in and fill in for him and also kiss the right ass. But I don't think anybody really kisses an ass like Brian Stelter does. Because he's willing to, there's something wrong with somebody willing to humiliate themselves. If Jeff Zucker called up and said, look, I'm going to need you to sit naked and slowly fondle yourself while drizzling honey down your chest during this week's episode, Brian Stelter would do it. And I realize that some of you may have just eaten, and I apologize for that. But if you haven't eaten, I just saved you money on breakfast or lunch. But he's that type of person. He's that pathetic. Now, lastly, I want to leave you with this because, and this has nothing to do with politics per se, but it's our cultural rot. I'm not one to talk about our cultural rot. I enjoy all sorts of, of things in our pop culture. But on the other day, last week sometime, Cardi B released a new song with somebody called Mulatto or something like that. I never heard of her. I don't listen to shitty music, so I don't know. But it was trending all over the place, and it was like, oh, it's raunchy, it's this, it's that. So I was like, I'll check it out and see. Maybe it's sexy, at least. I could enjoy that aspect of it. But it wasn't. It's a couple of fat chicks wearing clothes that are too tight with their boobs hanging out, grinding around on each other. And the lyrics are, I don't, they make porn dialogue seem intelligent. It's terrible. But Apple Music, which means that this was embraced by Apple, hosted a roundtable discussion for Cardi B and all the other morons who appeared in the video. And apparently somebody named Suki Hana, which I don't think is her real name, S-U-K-I, and then last name H-A-N-A. She's really fucking stupid. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. She's a fucking idiot, and I apologize for dropping the F-bombs. But I've not heard anybody this dumb speak in a long time. Now, granted, I don't tend to seek out dumb people. But this one was being tweeted around, gotten to my timeline. Listen to Suki Hana, and if you have daughters and you let them listen to Cardi B, this is the kind of shit that they're learning. This is the kind of stuff that they're hearing. This is the mentality that comes through from these morons. And I it's barely coherent. This person is young. She's not suffering from dementia. She's suffering from being completely stupid and thinking that she can get by, well, for lack of a better word, fucking dudes and sucking their dicks. And this is apparently a successful person who thinks that's the key to their success. So if your kids subscribe to the Apple Music podcast or Apple Music chat or whatever the hell it is, they saw this idiot. And the other, by the way, the other four women on the panel were nodding in agreement because they're just as dumb. They're just smart enough not to actually say it.
I feel like being like sexual and shit, like, I don't see nothing wrong with that because, baby, I got three kids. And, I mean, I got these kids from sucking and fucking. At the end of the day, me being a hoe, like these people say, like, honestly, I liberate a lot of hoes. You feel me? When I hear Cardi talk about popping some pussy, me and my bitches is with it. Like, that liberate us because it's like, fuck you, self-respect ass hoes. Cause how y'all got self-respect? Like, I don't think y'all got self-respect like that. Because, first of all, you supposed to tax these niggas. That's self-respect. You feel me? Like, it make me feel liberated. Like, I love crossing boundaries. Because guess what? Scare money don't make no money. If you're going to be scared to get that money, you're going to be scared to be yourself and say, this who I am, then you ain't going to get that coin like that.
Yeah, you got to tax them. You got to screw them, get knocked up by them, and get them to pay you child support, apparently. That's her philosophy on how to run a business. Suki Hana, go through your kids' phones and see if there's anything by Cardi B or Suki Hana. And if there is, smash their phone in half. This is the lesson. Ah, yeah, I'd screw anybody if they got enough money. And I think that they can, if I can tax them like that, that's all good. Yeah, that's how I make my money. I bet she loves her children. Don't you? Then, to put a fine point on it, she had something else to say, just to clarify that this wasn't, in fact, a TED Talk or part of a Suze Orman seminar on financial wealth, but, in fact, some idiot IQ, probably south of 20, moron who, if you offered her $1 million to string together a 5-word grammatically correct sentence, your money would be safe. She went on to say this.
I honestly feel like niggas ain't got no choice because, you know, hoes from back in the day have evolved. Like, hoes don't just bring no head to the table. Like, we got businesses. We rich as fuck. We got 5-6 different incomes. Like, a hoe is a rich-ass bitch who ain't finna just take anything from a nigga. Like, we need our coin. Bitch, I need you to give me a business. Like, you gotta bring something to the table to fuck with me.
Like, poor eyesight and low self-esteem and no taste in women, if you want to fuck with Suki Hana, you can do it. just don't get caught in her gravitational pull and burn up in her atmosphere, or get dragged into the void that is the black hole behind her eyes and in between her ears. This is what your kids are being indoctrinated by if you aren't paying attention to the music that they're listening to, ladies and gentlemen. Like I said, forcibly grab your kid's phone and look and see if they have any music from this person. Delete it, ground them, and make sure they never are exposed to this crap again. God, what's sick is she probably is rich. She probably, her three baby daddies probably pay her a pretty penny in child support, which she then shuffles a little bit of it off to some illegal alien to raise her kids because she's too busy out there looking for victim number four. Oh, you want to get with me? I'm going to need to see some receipts. I'm going to need to see some tax forms. And then no condom, please. Society is killing itself. The embrace of the stupid. We're really, really speeding faster than light towards idiocracy, like you wouldn't believe. And just take a wild flyer as to how she's going to vote in the presidential election and in every election down the ballot. Yep, I think you know. Look, the Trump campaign is a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure that the lucky winner is one of his top supporters like you, so be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you're not going to want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you have to do to enter is text Derek to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's D-E-R-E-K to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. Paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Well, now you've seen a shining hour-long example of what we're up against in that fight, haven't you? That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. The Patreon site, you can still go listen to the Dirty Podcast, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Nobody is squeamish or offended by obscenities because it's a chance to vent. Otherwise, we'll be back here tomorrow with a brand new, exciting episode. Have yourself as good a Monday as humanly possible. Tomorrow, we're closer to the weekend. Thanks for listening.
We need our coin. Bitch, I need you to give me a business. Like, you got to bring something to the table to fuck with me.